Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Ron Baker. Ron is a longtime advocate for elimination of the billable hour for all professionals, and while not a lawyer himself, his work has inspired many lawyers and professionals alike to stop billing time. Ron is a published author many times over and was known for his years of work on value-based billing, but over the last few years, he has been pushing the subscription model as the best model for professional firms and most recently co-authored the book appropriately titled Time's Up, the subscription business model for professional firms. In his book and in this interview, Ron shares his wealth of knowledge on the subscription model and provides valuable insights for lawyers interested in and already using the model. If you're listening on the day of publication, I'll be going live with Ron and his co-host Ed Kless on their show, The Soul of Enterprise, at 2 p.m. Central Time. Link to that interview is in the show notes. Thanks, as always, to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel. Links to both in the show notes. More on them later. And remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast. You get 10% off, and it really supports the show. If you've signed up with them, please let me know how you like them. I'd love to hear from you, Kurbis@lawsubscribe.com. For subscriptionseminar.com, I'm taking firms off the waitlist one at a time in the order they signed up, so sign up now to get your spot in line. I'm an active participant in that process of helping you use the subscription model, so I can only work with so many at a time. Thank you for your patience. The podcast is finally getting more traction, so please rate and review it if you haven't already to help others discover the show, and as always, share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. In what I hope is a new trend, I'm now having subscription and pricing experts on the podcast, starting with episode 33, Robbie Kelman-Baxter, and now it's my honor and pleasure to have Ron Baker. Ron, welcome to the podcast Law Subscribed.
Matthew, thanks for having me.
So if you never heard of Ron, and I hope that the lawyers listening have been doing research on the subscription model and not just listening to this show, but Ron is a recovering CPA, a fellow warrior in eliminating the billable hour. Really, I follow in Ron's footsteps. And he's even gone so far as to start a think tank called Verisage Institute with the mission to, unsurprisingly to this audience, since I'm having Ron on the show, end the billable hour in all professions. So naturally, Law Subscribed's mission is convince attorneys to stop billing time. So, Ron, I think it was only a matter of time before our paths crossed.
I agree. I found out about your podcast from another lawyer and been binge listening to it. And just listen to the Robbie episode. I love Robbie. And so, yeah, what you're doing is great.
So most recently, though, you started with like the value-based billing in trying to end the billable hour. But you have a recent book, very recent, Time's Up, and it's about the subscription model. So just to tease my listeners a little bit on how you came to the subscription model first, and then we'll get into your background.
Okay. I started learning about subscription. Well, I knew about concierge doctors back in the early 2000s, but I didn't have the language or the expertise to comprehend what exactly what it was they were doing. I called it retainer-based medicine, and it's not retainer-based. It's a subscription-based. And when I read Teen Zo's book, I think around 2018, that's what really made me do a deep dive on subscription and how could it be applied to professional firms. Since I work across all professional firms that bill by the hour, actuarial, architecture, lawyers, done a lot of work in the legal space, CPAs, obviously, because that's where I'm from, and consulting, IT consulting. I just said the model has already been proven for professional firms, and the model is concierge doctors and direct primary care doctors, which all that is, Matthew, it's like a Ritz-Carlton and a Hilton Garden Inn. They're just different price points. That's all. They're just different price points. And the DPC docs are out there and they're changing the way healthcare is delivered in this country. It's a true revolution.
Yeah. And the price points mentioned is a thread I want to briefly pull because while I don't always publish these episodes in the order I record them, there will be an upcoming episode with a pricing expert. And we talk about the difference between what people perceive as like a cheaper price or a high-end product. And it really just, does it end with a zero or a nine? But every lawyer right now charges a premium price. I mean, most lawyers will charge a billable hour price that ends in a zero. But whether it's $250 an hour or $1,000 an hour, it's a premium price, leaving a massive latent market of potential clients And there is no Walmart or Target for legal services, except for I tried to build a law firm that fills that market in the state of Illinois. So what is your thought around that strategic pricing where there's massive market opportunity?
Yeah, the whole access to justice, I know, is a big theme for you. And I would just point out that, yeah, I think subscription is perfect for that. I mean, I guess, you know, Zoom tried it and I don't know how successful they've been, but they're one of the most recognized brands in the legal space anyway. I think it's great. The people get all wrapped around the axle when they start talking about business strategy and positioning in the market. But those things have to be figured out first, long before you get to pricing. Business positioning and strategy are the senior partners. Pricing is the junior partner. It's the last thing. Because look, I'm going to have a completely different pricing model if I'm United Airlines versus Southwest Airlines. And so if you want to do what professional pricers call a penetration pricing strategy, where you go into a market with a very cheap price relative to your value, not so much all the competition that's out there, but relative to your value offering, because your goal is to build market share, then that's perfect for access to justice. The other side of that, the other extreme, is skim pricing, where you go into the market and you don't care about market share. You're trying to capture the most value you can. This is Apple. This is FedEx. This is Wachtell Lipton, the most successful, profitable law firm in the world. You know, they just charge, what, Twitter, $90 million for 3 months of work. They don't do anything by the hour. So you can have both ends of that. I just think they have to be done under separate brands. It'd be very hard to put those into one firm.
I'm so glad we're starting with this incredible insight. I think if the listeners already haven't sped it down to one-time speed, now's the time to do that. Ron, let's get back into your history. What got you started here? I mean, you were a CPA ways back. And what was the catalyst to you deciding billing time just isn't the way?
After I spent 2.5 years in a Big Eight accounting firm in San Francisco, I started my own firm with a partner, and I learned rapidly, because when you're a solo, you're doing everything, right? You're the marketing guy, sales guy, janitor, everything. And I finally got into the billing. You know, I never billed at a Big Eight firm. That wasn't my duty. And I realized the billable hour was a lousy customer experience. At the time, I was studying Disney and Lexus and Nordstrom, all these great service providers. I went to the Disney University because of those studies. And I said, this is a lousy customer experience. Why don't we just give the customer a fixed price? Like everything else they buy on the planet, they know the price before they buy. Somehow, we lawyers, we professionals, we think we're not subject to the same laws of economics as every other business, but we are, because it's just humans. Humans buy things. Businesses buy nothing. Humans inside businesses buy things. And we bring our own assessments of risk and value to those equations. And we just started doing fixed prices. And there was nobody out on the circuit talking about it. There were 3 books written by the ABA, published by the ABA, Richard Reed, who I think is long gone, by the way. And I ran into those a little bit later, and they were very helpful. But we made every mistake under the sun, almost to the point where we went back to the billable hour. What prevented us was the customers loved it. And because, Matthew, we were no longer basing our billing on time, no reason for a timesheet. The mm-hmm. team loved that. I loved that. I haven't met anybody who likes doing a timesheet. We got rid of the timesheet. Then I started teaching this. I wrote a first book about it. That book was published by Harcourt Brace. It sold 40,000 copies around the world. And interestingly, Aspen bought Harcourt. And Aspen's a big legal publisher. And that's how I became really well-known among lawyers and started working with lawyers. And that book sold 40,000 copies over its 6 editions. And it was a $150 book.
Where are those 40,000 lawyers who are not billing their time? What, I mean, like, that is the thing, right? Like, I mean, I guess that's what keeps you working, doing what you're doing, is it takes so much to get through the thick skulls of the professionals who think keeping timesheets is the way to go.
They're out there. There are many points of light out there in the legal profession that have ditched the billable hour. And, you know, I know the ABA article had an article. I have it right here. I can send you the link, but I'm sure you've seen it. It's from 2019.
Yeah.
It profiled like 12 firms using subscription. And you can find pockets of excellence from firms that don't do anything by the hour, including litigation, by the way. The big boogeyman in law, I know, is, well, you could never do litigation because we just have no idea. Like a lawyer's, everything that comes to a lawyer's door is a black hole. Well, I'll tell you, the last thing I want to hear from my surgeon being wheeled into OR is, oh, wow, look at that. I've never seen that before. I've got the wrong lawyer.
Right.
They can't give me a price, period. Period. End of sentence. If you can't give me a fixed price, or at least scope it into phases, I've got the wrong lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think—
an accountant and everything else.
Yeah. Right. And I think because the billable hour is such a scary boogeyman for consumers of legal services that they don't hire lawyers, that's why lawyers have no reason to change their model, because they don't have enough potential clients not banging on their door or refusing to sign up because the lawyers refuse to give them a price. Part of that may be lawyers have a monopoly on legal services, with the exception of Arizona and in some ways in Utah. So we're seeing that change. And even there are some lawyers using the subscription model who are still tracking their time, and it boggles the mind. But, you know, some of them are serving institutional clients, so it's like a half step. These are clients who are used to seeing the timesheets. They still want to see it. So, I mean, I kind of get it, but I think you need to have a goal to transition away from timesheets if you are not tracking your time for billing purposes. There still seems to be a through line, though, whether by nature or by nurture or both, that those of us who see the light that the billable hour is awful for all the reasons that you've already said and that longtime listeners of this podcast know, that we see the difference there, that like we can put ourselves in the shoes of the consumer. Well, if I was hiring if I was paying for legal services, if I was paying for financial or accounting services, I would want a fixed price.
Yep.
But most lawyers billing, all the lawyers billing time, most lawyers are doing that still in private practice, don't see that light. Like, what do you think it is? Like, so at least to you, Ron, like, what is it about you that allowed you to be able to see the world that way?
I think, like you said, looking at it through the customer side eyes, because studying great service companies like Disney at the time, everything, the focus is all on the customer and the customer experience or journey, whatever you want to call it. And the billable hour is not a price. It's an hourly rate. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden now you're putting the cognitive load on the customer to say, well, we're $1,000 an hour. The next question out of the customer's mouth is going to be, well, how long do you think this is going to take? They're not asking that because they care how many hours you're going to spend. They're asking that because they want a price. Give them a price. They'll pay a premium for a fixed price. And my insight at the time was really simple. 90% of the people pick a fixed rate mortgage and they pay a premium for it. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't cost the bank more to process a fixed rate mortgage versus a variable rate. In fact, the variable rate costs some more because they have to recompute the bill every now and then.
Right.
And it was like certainty, predictability, simplicity. All of these things are now available with the subscription model. And what I love about the subscription model, maybe its biggest advantage, is we take the cognitive load of pricing off the customer. Because I don't care if you're billing by the hour or even if you're value pricing, dare I say it, we're throwing a cognitive load for every engagement, every project back onto the customer. Even if we're going through the value conversation and trying to figure out the outcome, it's still a cognitive load and they still have to make a decision. But if they subscribe to you, they've already made that decision.
Right.
Now you've just got to make sure you stay in touch with them. You cultivate and nurture that relationship, grow that relationship, and the work doesn't matter. The services, I think, in all professions are just a means to an end. We get wrapped around the axle about the services and the scope of work and all of this stuff. I think subscription blows this all up. I think what matters and what we're in a privileged position to do as CPAs and lawyers is guide transformations. We can take a customer from where they are to where they want to be, some desired future state. And we can do it over and over and over and over again, serially. We can guide serial transformations. Porsche can't do that. Starbucks can't do that. Disney can't do that. Yes, they can give us a great experience, but they can't guide us and change us, because when you guide transformations, the customer's the product.
Yeah,
the services are just a means to an end.
And what you just said is really also just a taste of what's in Time's Up, because even though I'm still working my way through the book at the time of recording, I'm even going in piecemeal. Like, I've got it right in front of me right now. And I could literally open it up to any page and there'll be just incredible insight, like what you're talking about, which I think is really valuable to the book. So after you have read it and gone through the book, you can at any point for a reminder, just pick it up and open a page and they're going to find something of value. Kind of, it sounds like you write very much like how you speak. I know you have a co-author, Paul Dunn, but I could, you know, hearing, I've been listening to the podcast now, of course, and so I'm getting to know your voice a lot more, but just hearing you talk on the show, Ron, your book sounds so much like you. I kind of want to ask you about that, except that, like, everything that you just said is also incredibly valuable, but there's one more, I want to push you one more time to see how deep we can get, because Disney is out there. Everyone knows Disney. All these books that you've read, all the information you consumed, Richard Reed's books were out there, but there's something about you that made you take it differently, to put you on the path that you're on right now. And I think that I'm trying to find connective tissue between those of us who are challenging the status quo. You know, women and attorneys of color are doing it more than white men in the legal profession. And in part, that's because of the structure of the big law firm for white men, right? And the politics that go along with that. Then there are those who are more neurodiverse. Then there are those who are first generation attorneys. And, like, you know, I'm trying to find the through line of there's something different. And what is that? And can we distill that to help more people see the light? So yeah, like, what is it about you, Ron? Like what is it?
Well, I think I can claim credit for being the first guy, because when you read books on value pricing for lawyers or accountants or whoever, I was the first guy to draw a distinction between the labor theory of value and the billable hour. And this is from deep economic theory, and basically calling lawyers and accountants practicing Marxists, because they were, you know, they fell prey to the labor theory of value, which basically says the value of a good or a service is solely determined by the amount of time that goes into it. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Marx didn't like profit, and of course, we add profit to our billable hour, but it's still largely labor, and the more labor, the more value. Well, that's insane, Matthew, because if I find a rock next to a diamond, well, then why isn't the rock just as valuable as the diamond? It took as many billable hours to make. If I'm eating my 15th slice of pizza, that should be just as valuable to me as my first or second, because after all, it took the pizza person just as much time to make the 15th slice as it did the first and second. If I'm taking my 15th shot of tequila, it should be just as about, I mean, it's an insane theory,
yeah,
but it's held sway for centuries. I mean, it's really kind of amazing. And that's kind of how I blasted out of the gate with this. And it put people off, and a lot of people got offended and pissed off at me. But now it's kind of generally accepted that the subjective theory of value is far more explanatory about how people spend their money than is the labor theory of value. Because look, I could spend thousands and thousands of hours writing my new book, and nobody buys it. What am I supposed to do? Walk around with a cheese board and go, do you realize how many billable hours I put into that book? You have to buy it. No, the world doesn't owe you a living. And the billable hour makes it look like, just because you have overhead and profit desires, that the world owes you a living. And it doesn't. It was here first.
Going back to the transformation that professionals sell makes me think about the as a service terminology that's used for software companies, software as a service, and they sell on subscription. But what about service as a service? Where is the disconnect? I mean, they're using it as a service. Professionals, we're service professionals. So, like, I'm just asking, because you're such an expert in it. Like, where did that disconnect happen? That as a service, well, services, we're not, you know, so many of us are just billing time. So why is that a misnomer in that way?
Right. You know, one of the things I talk about is from Joe Pyne's book, The Experience Economy, which is a great book. And we've interviewed Joe a couple times. He has a hierarchy of value in his book that was first published, by the way, in 1998. And it's very rare for a business book to be relevant after 25 years. I mean, that and his hierarchy of value to me is just as relevant. And he lays out commodities and products, and services. And when I read it for the first time, I said, well, CPAs are service providers. We're professional service firms. I no longer believe that. I think we're professional knowledge firms. Mm-hmm. And I think what we are, the ultimate hierarchy of value is you go from services to experiences like Disney and Starbucks, and then you go to transformations. And that's where the highest point of value is, because we can guide these transformations and we can do it over and over. And that's why I like the language of transformation as a service. That's what we're really doing for our customers.
That's guiding
transformations. So it's TAS, not SaaS.
Right. I love it. I love it. That's great. That's fantastic. I'm going to start using that. Yeah, I can't help but just hearing you, you know, quoting this book, referencing this. It's almost like I've got like a generative AI model on my show right now, because you're just like, in this, it's like you have access to all of the information on subscription and value billing. So with that, let's move to the discussion of the significance that like artificial intelligence and generative AI is having in the space of billable hours. I see more and more articles these days. I've written a few myself about how, and we've had conversations on the show of how generative AI is really might be that thing that finally helps kill the billable hour. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think you're right. I think technology has been eating hours for decades, whether it's moving to the cloud and all the cloud-based applications that we now use that allows us to do more work in less time. And so, yes, I agree that the billable hour technology in general has been a bigger driver of getting rid of the billable hour than has what I thought it would be, which was the competition for talent. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, Matthew, I'm really frustrated by this. Because think about it, the billable hour was okay for us stupid human rats. But now once we have ChatGPT in the mix, well, no, it's too fast. So we have to move away from the billable hour. I find that offensive that it took technology to make this switch. The billable hour has sucked since its inception. And we've made lawyers and accountants, we put them through this model that doesn't cause burnout. I don't think it's burnout. I think it's moral injury because it's not why we join the profession. I started asking people when I started writing Time's Up, doctors and lawyers and accountants, everybody, every professional, why'd you become a lawyer? Number one answer around the world, two-thirds, three-fourths of the time was to help people.
Yeah.
You can't help people if you got thousands of customers. You're kidding yourself. You can't have a deep impact. You can't really transform their lives over and over and over again if you've got too many customers. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have a business that scales based on relationships. You can, but I'm just talking about any one professional can probably only have a Dunbar number of customers mm-hmm. that they can really have a profound impact on. And that's why we all became the professional that we did. And our business models doesn't reflect that. There's a gap between what we say, what we believe, and how we're monetizing. We're in a fee-for-service model. I don't care if you're hourly billing or value pricing or fixed fee. It's fee-for-service. It's transactional. It's not relational. Subscription's relational. And that's the game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I like where to take this interview. We could go in so many different directions, Ron. I'm having such a hard time. This is both the easiest and the most difficult interview I've ever had on the show.
Wow.
So, oh man, this is hard. This is really hard to do. I'm trying to figure out which thread to pull. So there's different ways that I think this can be accomplished, right? As far as like how many people can you meaningfully represent if you're an attorney, you know, for most of my listeners on the show are. I feel like the subscription model also lends itself well to account for what you just said. So like, you can subscribe at a lower price. And for that lower tier, you know, what do you get? Maybe like a generative AI chatbot that's been trained on firm data, how the attorneys in the firm respond and talk to clients. And maybe you could get really valuable legal information because the bot can't give legal advice up to a point.
Right.
And then maybe, you know, for those people who want more one-on-one or more, you know, actual human-to-human interaction, maybe then you get to the higher subscription level. And then when you actually need a lot of work done, that's your tier three, right? So, you know, maybe there's a way to do all of that, even in one business model. So that's the way that you could scale and help more people, but it doesn't require, not every issue requires a one-on-one type relationship to solve. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I heard the show where you talked with the guy who came up with the idea for the national law firm. Now, he was talking about government possibly funding that. I still think it could be done by the private sector mm-hmm. or the not-for-profit sector. I think the model is One Medical, that Amazon just spent $3.4 billion and you can subscribe to for $144 a year if you're a Prime member. That's $12 a month. And you have access to a general physician. And, you know, you can send them pictures, you can text them, you can email them. We've interviewed a DPC doc. Now, he's not part of One Medical, he's a solo, but he's also got five doctors working for him, and he's opened two offices since we started talking to him. And he's $100 a month, Matthew. He works in the south of Detroit. So his demographic is, you know, poorer than the average for the country, but he flourishes. Now, each doctor is limited to 600 patients. The average GP in the U.S. has 2,400 patients. So he's only running at 75, he's cut out 75% of the normal patient load of a GP, but his average appointment with these patients is over an hour, sometimes two. And he's got same day access. He's always got capacity for his patients, his members, if you will. Yeah. And that's why these doctors are changing the game. My dad signed up for a DPC with his wife, and it took him 6 months to get in. I hate to say it, you have to wait for somebody to die, because they all have waiting lists, because the demand for them outstrips the supply. And I think the same thing could apply to legal.
Yeah, I think so. You know, you keep bringing up Amazon as an example, and I've been thinking, or you've brought up Amazon as an example, and that was a big inspiration for my model, which is the $20 a month, you know, affordable, accessible pricing to get subscribed. And can you get legal advice for that price? Sure, of course you can, but most legal situations require more than just a 15-minute conversation.
Sure.
And now my clients are my clients. I am their lawyer. And so when they need anything, I'm the person who they come to. And if I can't help them, I could refer it out, right? But it's what Amazon Prime does, right? Like, you're paying them to do business with them,
right?
With the Prime model. And you're going
same
to do
Costco.
More business with them. Right. Same with Costco. Yes, exactly.
Right.
And a client of mine who pays me much more than $20 a month, a business client, but a C-suite executive for a business client of mine recently asked me, will you ever change the $20 a month? And I thought about it, and I was thinking of Costco, actually, in that instance, because Costco has not changed the price of their hot dog, I think, ever, right? Since they launched.
It's true.
Whatever gets people, and even their subscriptions for their membership have not increased that much over the length of time that Costco has been in business. So I thinking about that, I was thinking, no, why should I? Because all the rest of the value that I could provide my clients and that I'll get from my clients is all the other stuff after they're subscribed at $20 a month. So, you know, we see Costco doing it. We see, you know, Amazon doing it. So like, and I'm trying it.
Right,
I'll
right.
let you know. I'm 18 months in, Ron. But like, have you seen in your experience, you know, and doing what you do at the Institute, you know, have you seen anyone else doing some version of this kind of a model?
No, not for the purpose that you're going after it, you know, for access to justice. But one of the things that me and my colleague Ed Kless that I do the show with are really intrigued by is, what if all these DPC doctors, and there's over 2,000 independent practices, not including like the One Medicals and CVS and Walmart's getting into DPC as well, by the way. Mm-hmm. But what if these 2,000 DPC docs banded together and subscribe to cardiac surgeons who also may be banded together? And then you could have these subscriptions where you would have referral networks. So if a DPC doc who doesn't do cardiac surgery, obviously, could say, oh, but we have somebody in our social capital network who does this, and it's covered because you're at that tier with the DPC doc, and the DPC doc's at that tier with the cardiac surgeon. I think there's all sorts of innovative opportunities that my mind can't even wrap its head around yet, but I know there's possibilities there, because if I don't know if you've ever run across the Oklahoma Surgery Center, but
no.
Go to the Oklahoma Surgery Center. It's they don't take insurance. They don't. They're like a DPC doc, but for surgery. There's a human frame on their website, you know, human skeleton, and you click on the body part that you need surgery for, you know, knee replacement, hip replacement, gallbladder removal, and it'll give you a price, one price, including post-op, including, you know, staying there and recovering. If there's a week recovery, it's all inclusive. And I'm telling you, these prices are amazing, and they're pissing off the hospitals, because now the hospitals, patients can go into the hospital and go, I can go to the Oklahoma Surgery Center and get this done for $3,000, and you want to charge me $100,000.
Right.
So I think there's all sorts of innovations that the subscription model opens up that we haven't even thought of.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database, since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. I mean, I can't help myself, Ron, but going back to generative AI, I was having a conversation on a GP Solo division of the ABA podcast, and we were talking about generative AI and the power that it can, like what it can do for individual attorneys, you know, general practice solo attorneys. And like where the conversation took us towards the end of the interview, I was talking about how I think it could empower an individual attorney to scale, represent more people, do good work more efficiently, to the extent that maybe you could have a neural network of sorts of all these different solo lawyers across the country in their own practice areas. And if we reduced, the conversation was around multi-jurisdictional barriers to practicing law and eliminating those barriers. So that was the context of the conversation. So if we could eliminate those barriers and you empower, using technology, these solo practitioners who are not billing their time but on subscription with their clients, you can create a network effect of lawyers across the country to help serve way more people than you could, in the same way that a spider web with multiple different strands going in different directions can hold more weight, right? So like, I think that I absolutely, you know, empathize with what you were talking about. We're simpatico on that with the doctors. I think with the lawyers, we could do something too. And that reminds me of something else I wanted to talk to you about with the generative AI thing. Sorry to keep bringing it back to that, but it's the sexy topic everyone wants to talk about these days. I agree with you that it's unfortunate that it took something like generative AI, which very clearly kills billable time more so than any other technology solution did before, potentially, to convince more people that the billable hour needs to go. But from a pure economic standpoint, I mean, the most profitable way that you could make money with a tool like that is simply not billing your time. Right. I mean, you'd have to 10x, 20x your rate. And what client's going to want to pay $10,000, $20,000 an hour, even if it takes you 5 minutes to do it? Nobody's going to want to see $10,000 an hour on the invoice, right? What do you think about that being a reason to convince people to get out of billing time?
Oh, yeah, I think that makes enormous sense to people. But I'm surprised that that didn't have more of an impact just with technology in general. There's been a lot of technology coming down the pike, Calendly, Zoom, all these different things that we use in our tech stack to automate our lives and make it simpler. It hasn't really reduced the billable hour. It's had an impact. I don't want to discount that, but hasn't reduced it as much as I thought. But yeah, ChatGPT, I think it's fear. I think people think that this is going to replace lawyers. And this is all overblown to me. I mean, the history of technology is it grows jobs. It doesn't wipe them out. Now, it might change the job or it might eliminate some tasks that you do, but AI is neither artificial nor is it intelligence. It's not sentient. It doesn't do things the way a human does. It's kind of like asking a submarine if it can swim, right? It's kind of a stupid question because the submarine is doing something in a different way than we humans would. And it needs to be said that AI doesn't have a soul. And we humans, we need that personal connection and servicing one another. And as much as I like the idea of being able to go into ChatGPT and ask it a legal question, I still want it to be curated by you if I know you and I trust you. And I want to have a conversation with you about it because you know me, you know my life, you know my family, you know what you know matters to me. And I don't know if ChatGPT is ever going to replace that. I don't think it will. Now, it can augment it. It can give us superhuman powers. But I think if you're bad at what you do, it can also destroy you. If you're good at what you do, it can make you superhuman. So I just look at it as a complement to our skill set and our knowledge base, not as a substitute.
As tempted as I am to like keep talking about generative AI, you're the, you know, the time's up guy right now, Ron. You're the subscription model, you know, evangelist now along with me. So let's go back to that. Some pushback that I do get from lawyers who are interested in the subscription model, but they start thinking about subscriptions being, or for law, they're interested, but they start thinking about, well, I'm subscribing to everything now. What about subscription fatigue? Like, I don't think my clients are going to want to subscribe to legal services on top of everything else that they're already subscribing to. And, you know, I try to find a kind way to push back and say you're completely lacking any imagination whatsoever on how you're thinking about delivering and pricing your subscription for legal services. But like, what do you say to something like that? Because there's something to be said about being oversubscribed to different things these days.
Absolutely. I mean, there's apps that you could use now to cancel, right? I mean, so that shows you subscription fatigue is real. It's more real in the B2C space, business to consumer space. People, you know, signed up for the beer of the month and the fruit of the month and the bark box and all, and realize, hey, maybe I don't need all this after a while. Mm-hmm. But it's not as true in the B2B space. Nobody's going to give up Zoom. Nobody's going to give up Calendly. Nobody's going to give up QuickBooks. You know, and I like the fact that it's a predictable amount every month. It comes out of the, you know, the OpEx budget, not the CapEx budget, right? And I just don't see subscription fatigue. I see people clamoring to get into DPC doctors and even concierge doctors. They all have waiting lists. What's that tell you? Now, some people say, well, it tells us that they don't serve enough patients. No, it tells you that they're doing a really good job with the patients they do serve. And that the only way they end up leaving is when they pass away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, I don't see subscription fatigue as a big deal. I think if you are offering recurring value and who, you know, people want three things from professionals, especially. This goes back to Ben Franklin. They want to be healthier, wealthier, and wiser. And now doctors take care of the health, but lawyers and CPAs, we do the wealthier and the wiser. You know, we're educators. We keep them out of trouble. So much emphasis in our worlds, both our worlds are put on solving problems. We're a great problem solvers. I go to the lawyer with the IRS on my back. They're going to get a stay. They're going to do a lot of things that are going to pull me out of the fire. However, if all we're doing for our customers is solving problems, we're just reverting them back to the status quo. We're not advancing them. And we have the power and the privilege to advance them. Mm-hmm. And that's our highest point of value. And I think we need to put a lot more emphasis there rather than just what keeps you awake at night and solving problems.
And that's what the membership model provides, is you're helping them stay out of trouble. You're not putting out fires. You're not a firefighter. You're an architect. You're building.
You're a fire insurance salesman. I'd rather sell fire insurance and prevent fires than be a fire. Nothing against firemen. I got a lot of relatives who are, but you know, they're kind of strange people. They like to run into fires. I like to run out away from them.
Right. Metaphorically speaking, of course.
Right.
Yes. Another topic of discussion lately, which, you know, companies that have been doing subscriptions for a long time have no other choice, but as professionals are designing their own subscription models, hiding that subscription button, right? And making it not as easy to unsubscribe as resubscribe. Have you gone down this path at all, Ron, on what's the best way to do onboarding, offboarding, re-onboarding with subscription?
You've got to make that cancel button available at every touch point. It has to be simple. It has to be one click, just like Amazon, one click buy. You need to be able to unsubscribe because we need to trust our value. And look, I don't want people subscribing and paying me hard-earned money if they're not getting value from me. Netflix noticed that about 400,000 subscribers didn't log in for a year. They sent out an email. It's in Time's Up. You'll see it. And the guy said, look, we don't want you spending money if you're not accessing us and utilizing us and getting value. So within 3 months, if you don't log in, we're going to cancel you. They canceled 400,000 subscribers, Matthew, 400. Now, as a former recovering cost accountant who repents every day, by the way, that's crazy. These are the best customers in the world. They pay every month and they never touch the service or access it. That's great. No, it's not in the subscription world. You want people talking to you. You want that. The biggest thing that DPC docs and even concierge docs had to do, and this blew my mind, they said the hardest part of this practice is re-educating the customer to call us first. Don't go to the ER. I don't care if it's Sunday, 3 a.m. You call me first. And we want to see you, not just when you're sick, but when you're healthy. They constantly struggle with that because we have this thing in the West about only going to the doc when we're sick. They try and re-educate their patients, and that's hard for them. And we get so wrapped up, what if the hypochondriac, the cyberchondriac comes in and camps out in our office? And well, first off, you can always fire an unreasonable customer. It works both ways. We can unsubscribe them too, right, with enough notice and within ethical boundaries. Yeah, sure. But the fact is that doesn't happen. The statistic that really blows my mind is 90% of the phone calls and texts that doctors get, these DPC docs get, happen within normal business hours. Nobody wants to take advantage of their doctor unless they really, really need to. And when somebody texts you at 2 a.m. on Saturday, you probably want to hear, you probably want to see what's going on. It's probably something bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's your time to shine. My God, that's your time to come in and Superman with the cape and save them. And we worry about, but they're going to suck our time. Not about your time. It's about the impact you're having on their lives. It's why you join the profession, to help people.
Right.
Helping people doesn't have a clock attached to it. You can't ski. Relationships aren't done by staring at a clock.
As we begin to wrap up the interview here, just try to cover a few more broad scope topics with you. What to pick? A topic that I would have liked to get to a little bit earlier in the conversation, but it's all right to learn it now is, you were the value pricing guy for the longest time, and there's still value to value pricing. But what was it like? Was there a moment, or was there a thing, or a book? Was it Tien's book? Was there something where you said, aha? Like, what was like the aha moment for you of subscriptions? This deserves a lot of attention.
It was a gradual process. You know, it's very rare when you change your mind. We did a whole show on changing your mind. Sometimes it's a burning bush moment, no doubt. But more times than not, at least for me and other people I've talked to about this topic, it's a gradual process where you're wrestling with an issue for maybe many years. Could be a deep, issue like abortion, say, or something like that, where you really change your mind. You move from one side to the other. That's usually a big deal. And it became very apparent to me when I started studying subscription that value pricing and hourly billing is as good as more advantageous as VP was over hourly billing. It strengthened the relationship, more certainty for the customer, and all of that. I knew all that, but it's still transactional. It's still trading dollars for services. And it's kind of a treadmill, this terrible treadmill that we're on. And when I saw subscription with predictable revenue, with a different revenue model, the revenue model in subscription, what are we asking our customers to pay us for? To know they're covered, to know that I can go to you and you can help me with anything that I need that you can do. Now, there's the constraint. If you're a GP, you're not going to do cardiac surgery, hip replacement. You're going to refer me out to a specialist. But you're going to quarterback the relationship. You might even, these DPC docs go to those appointments with you. They'll sit in with your oncologist, make sure they know your family history and all of that. And that's when it dawned on me that this is relational. This has nothing to do with the transactions. The services are incidental to what we do as professionals. They really are. It's not about the trust document. It's not about the scope of work. It's not about how many hours is this litigation going to take or this negotiation. It's about the outcome. And even my landscaper, Matthew, he's got me priced based on giving me the best curbside appeal. He knows I want to sell within a couple of years. He's gradually, slowly, he's out here every week, and he's gradually, slowly updating my landscaping. So I don't care about the scope of work. I don't care how he does it. I don't care how long it takes. I don't care how much it costs. I don't care what kind of plants and flowers he's putting out there. All I know is when I list the home on the market, if I have the best curbside appeal, then the three times more he's charging me than my prior landscaper makes it all worth it. He's adding continuous value. And it's a relationship. That's nothing to do with the scope of work. And we just need to move away from the scope of work and the services. We get all wrapped around the axle about that. And that's the billable hour mindset. Subscription, it just frees you. And you float away from that and you'll never look back. And for me, I had to give up some tenants of value pricing. For instance, under value pricing, I would have never said to somebody, offer two options. Certainly you don't offer one because it's a yes, no binary choice, but don't do two either. Because if you put two choices in front of a human brain, they're going to pick the lower of the two. But if you put three choices in front of the human brain, now they're going to look for value. You're changing it from a price decision to a value decision. And that's why three is the magic number. Professional pricers call this Goldilocks pricing. Mm-hmm. That's why the magic. Now, sometimes you can have four, should never do more than four, but with subscription, you can have two. You can even have one, which absolute hearsay when I tell value pricing professionals this, but I think it's true. Spotify only has two choices. And who's to say that Spotify is not a successful subscription company, right? So I had to give up scope of work, change orders. Oh my God, it's scope of work. Oh, well, the other side did this. So we have to, you know, go to the Department of Paperwork and have you sign off on a change order at eight different levels. This is just bureaucracy. Just do the work. Just do the work. Because my favorite definition of what it means to be a professional is a professional is someone who is responsible for creating a result, not performing a task. And if I go to an eye doctor, I want the best clinical possible eyesight. And if I have to have multiple appointments to get there, that's his duty as a doctor. And same thing with a lawyer, same thing with a CPA. We're so focused on the task, whether we're hourly billing or value pricing or fixed feeing, and we're ignoring the result. We're ignoring that outcome, which now I'm calling a transformation because I think it's a more powerful and better word to use for branding. But that's a long-winded answer to your point.
Fantastic answer. And it does make me think about, you know, some of Robbie's work, like the Forever Promise, right? Now, certainly your landscaper, if you weren't planning on selling the home, just having beautiful landscaping and a week-to-week, you know, subscription or month-to-month, depending on how you're paying the landscaper, right? You know, you could see more of a Forever Promise there.
His middle option, by the way, was bringing you up to neighborhood standards, because I get these nasty notices from the HOA. And his first option was basic maintenance.
Yeah.
But of course, he asked me if I had plans to sell the home. So he knew I was a candidate for best curbside appeal.
Right.
And I'm paying him three times more than my prior landscaper, and I'm a happier customer. So this idea that our customers are price sensitive and only care about the cheapest price is nonsense. They're value conscious, and we don't do a good enough job demonstrating our value. That's because we talk about efforts and activities and hours rather than outcomes and transformations. So we need to change our language. There's a part in the book where I talk about the different language that's used for hourly billing, value pricing, and subscription. And the subscription is really changing our lexicon. You know, Werner Erhard said all transformations are linguistic. And he's right. I mean, I've got this story about Disney, about, you know, how he changed the language for Disneyland when he started it. It wasn't an amusement park. It was a theme park. It didn't have rides. It had adventures. He didn't have staff. He had cast members. They were on stage. They were off stage, backstage. I mean, this is as true in Disney today as it was when he started it. And that language transformation is a big part, I think, of the subscription model. We have to stop boring people with scope of work and services and start focusing on these transformations. I think it's a higher point of value.
Starbucks doesn't have employees. They have partners. I mean, that's another example, right? So I think, I definitely think language matters. It does remind me of an old high school girlfriend who used to say she doesn't think in language, she thinks in images. So I guess maybe there are some people out there, but then what does a theme park conjure up for you instead of an amusement park, right? Like it's tied together. Language and images are tied.
Right. And colors. Even I know people who think in colors, which I find they see a building and that's yellow or that's red. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I'm definitely a language thinker. We're doing a lot. Our chosen, professions, right?
Right.
Says a lot. So in, thinking about all of that, I wonder, considering ethics, how do you get clients to stay subscribed if that's your promise? Like if your promise is like mine is essentially, I'm your fractional in-house counsel, your fractional general counsel for your life or for your small business. So offload all of your legal to me and I'm going to take care of it for you. You never have to worry about it again. So you could focus on everything else, right? So like I have that forever promise and I'm still refining it.
Yep.
But if you're a litigator, and you're selling the result of the better result at the end of litigation, which might even be a settlement or mediation or something, I mean, then you're done. So you don't really have a forever promise.
Right.
So I guess
context
matters. And I don't mean to answer my own question, but what I do want to get for my listeners is your perspective on that.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. We get challenged on this all the time. How could a divorce attorney have a subscription? Because, unless your client is J-Lo and Elizabeth Taylor, how are you going to do this? I do think there's ways to do it. I do think there's follow-up after a divorce that probably needs to happen for at least a period of time. But there is a lot of one and done. I got challenged by a bunch of funeral homes to how could people subscribe to a funeral parlor? That's pretty, episodic, right? Well, I think there's ways to do it. What if it started a penny of the month when you were born and you slowly, up that over time? How could you subscribe to a drug company? I think that's possible. I just think this model forces you to think about the outcome more rather than the inputs and the outputs even, but the outcomes. There was a great experiment by a bunch of academics at a comedy club, and I think it was out of Madrid, Spain, where they put like an iPad behind every seat and they charged you per laugh. Now it maxed out at like 20 euros or something. And, the technology could determine if you were laughing or smiling or, having a good time. And that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And when you think about drug companies, GSK did a thing where they had a drug called Repatha, and it was to prevent strokes and heart attacks. And they had a real hard time getting it into the European countries to buy it, to offer it. And they said, well, listen, we know this is a $12,000 a year cocktail, but if you buy it and it's administered to a patient and then that patient has a stroke or a heart attack, we'll give you your money back. Now, that's focusing on performance, not promises. And maybe that's where subscription is a way station to. The last chapter in the book is what's next, where I kind of speculate on these types of issues. I don't know what's next. Nobody can see the future, but we can see where the logic goes with the subscription model that I want access to you. So when I have a problem, I know I'm in good hands. It's like insurance. You're offering a form of insurance. And I know we don't like to use that word. It's got all sorts of legal and regulatory connotations, but it is, and it's also insurance with an E, meaning you're securing an event or an outcome. And people will pay for that. People will also pay if you save them time. I've noticed that one of the biggest underserved things about business is they waste our time, whether it's calling them on the phone, dealing with their stupid bills that nobody can understand, whatever it is, they're wasting our time. If you waste my time, that's a cardinal sin. I'm done with you. And if you make that access easy, if you surface simplicity, if they don't have to go to the Department of Paperwork just because they have an issue maybe that is going to create a little bit more work for you this month. So what? Take care of them, because the profit formula with subscriptions is different. What we're doing with subscription is we're creating lifetime annuities that are more valuable than the cost to acquire them. And if that's our mindset, we're no longer looking at the math of the moment. We're looking at customer lifetime value. That's why the KPIs are different. That's why the accounting statement, the income statement is different. And it just requires a different mindset.
Yeah.
I mean, I found it really interesting, by the way, when you were talking with Robbie, she was talking about having two business models under one roof. And she said she softened on that. I've gone the other way. I've hardened on that. Now, I'm not talking if you're Disney, because Disney offers subscriptions. Right. And Apple gets 20% of its revenue from subscriptions, you know, iCloud,
subscriber,
things like that. However, most small professional firms don't have the managerial talent of Apple and Disney, nor do they have the resources. Having two business models under one roof is kind of like having two spouses. You can do it, but you're not going to like the result, because these are different mindsets. The subscription model, the other thing that needs to be said that I think people don't understand with the subscription model, you need to go to the market with an uncommon offering. It needs to be plussed, what Walt Disney called plussing the part, always adding to it to delight the guest and surprise them in new ways. And that's what brought them back. So I borrowed this idea of plussing, because if we go to the market with a common offering, what everybody else is, we're going to command common pricing. But if we go to the market with an uncommon offering, we can command uncommon pricing.
I don't think we're going to get any better than that. And one last thing I'd like to comment on, which is a funeral home. And this gives me an idea for a future episode or a future something that we need to do somewhere, is I think the value that a funeral home can provide a subscriber is not just where to go when they die, but also what to do to keep them out. And so I think there's something there. Mm-hmm. To, you know, partnering with the right partners. And, you know, so I think that they can, you know, because that's part of it is let's keep you out of here. Now it's their business to keep you out of here. But when it's time for you, because you've been a lifetime customer, your spot is ready, or, you know, whatever it looks like in however many years from now. So I would love a future episode, Ron, that we get the list of all the businesses that say they can't have a subscription, and we just tackle how you can. I think that'd be a heck of a lot of fun.
Right. We just need to start thinking more creatively about that. We're so caught in a transactional mindset. We sell SKUs, you know, and that's not the world that we're in now. The world is about access and simplicity, and not the burdens of ownership. You know, just, hey, when my refrigerator dies, bring me a new one. And don't make me go recycle it or call around and figure out who's going to take it off. Just get it out of here and bring me a new one. And we'll pay dearly for that.
Yeah. Well, with that, it brings us to my final question I ask all my guests, Ron, which is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Well, I guess the linguists have determined that, yes, it is. You know, it's funny. You can get a hot dog at Togo's and Subway. And they sell sandwiches, so I guess it is. It's not a hill I want to die on either way.
Okay, fair. I'll let it go. With that, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me on LinkedIn. I'm one of the influencers. I got a lot of posts up there and interviews. They can find me at thesoulofenterprise.com. That's the live radio show I do with my colleague Ed Kless. That does go out to podcasts, so you can subscribe to The Soul of Enterprise on any podcast player. And we run a weekly show. I think we're up to 450 or something shows that we've done. We've been on the air since 2014. And we have on our homepage, we have a tab called Categories. If you pull that down, you can click Subscription Model, and you can see every show that we've done on subscription, including the authors' interviews, including the DPC doc. We've talked to lawyers who use the subscription model. You're probably familiar with the Council for Creators, John Tobin, and other lawyers. And CPAs who use the subscription model. We've done a lot of single topic shows on subscription. How's it different from value pricing? What about project management? All these different issues. So people can find me at thesoulofenterprise.com. And also I'm on Twitter at Ronald Baker, or now X, I guess. Can't get used to that. And you can also email me at ron@verisage.com. Happy to have a conversation with anybody who's interested in subscription. And I'm also starting a community for people, for firm leaders who are really serious about subscription. And it's the Time's Up Club, concierge.com. And that's got a free forever package where we just want to bring a community together of like-minded thought leaders who are going to help each other and blaze the trail for everybody else and leave behind maps for the curious.
I absolutely love it. Thank you again so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Matthew. It was an honor.
Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kerbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kerbis with Law Subscribed.